Hello and welcome to The Ball Bags, a weekly podcast breaking down all the news from the United Rugby Championship, the NFL, the English Premier League, the NBA, and the wide world of sport. Hello, and thanks very much for tuning into this week's episode of The Ball Bags. This is the final episode this side of Christmas, Hanukkah, or whatever religious celebration you engage in. And we'll be back in 2024, dates TBC. But, as per the norm, delighted to be joined by the Chief. How are you, my fine sir?
I'm good, Sasquatch. How are you?
Yeah, all good, all good. Beginning to feel a bit Christmassy, not gonna lie.
Yeah.
And look, the man of the hour. Too sweet to be sour. It's Rocky. How are we, sir?
Not doing too bad now, Sasquatch. You're always very generous with your intros, but look, I'll take it. This is where I come from, my weekly compliments.
Bad. You're a man who gets to sit down with me and waffle show you about sport twice a week. I think you're doing exceptionally well.
Doing pretty good now. I'm like Ringo Starr. I'm getting a lot out of life, despite being devoid of talent.
Fair. It's a poor exception considering the other three blokes in the group were also devoid of talent. But look, that's a topic for another day. moving on. For the final time in 2023, gents, let's get to Player of the Week. So, Rocky, who's your Player of the Week and why?
Going to keep it very simple. I'm beating on the CJ Stroud drum again. He had a fine week. His number one wide receiver, Tank Dell, went down. When everybody sort of goes on about your quarterback needing a bona fide number one, he was without his for the game, and it was a high-pressure game against the Broncos. Really, this game decided the playoff fate for the two teams. The winner would likely go on, and he was just able to deliver. Maybe not impressive, but you just have to keep in mind that this fella is still a rookie on a team that has been fairly bad routinely for the last number of years, the last decade. Let Finn.
Fair. And Chief. Let's see who your player was.
So, my player of the week is Tom O'Hearn for Munster. Two tries against Glasgow in what's typically a niggly match between the two. I think Munster have struck gold by pushing him to six. He gives you that explosiveness in the lineout, but his speed and just his height and everything to be in that 15 meter channel and stuff is it's like a cheat code that they've unlocked, and he did a good all round game. He actually got man of the match in that game as well, so he's my player of the week.
Fair. This probably will go down like the Luftwaffe or whatever the balloon was that fell, the Zeppelin.
Classic phrase.
With Rocky, but my player of the week was Deebo Samuel. As much as it pains me to say, as a Philadelphia Eagle fan, but I just feel like he talked the talk since the NFC Championship game, and by God, he backed it up against us. So he's my player of the week.
Yeah, I hate it. I hate it, but I can't give it.
So, gents, if you had to pick one,
it's a tough one. As much as I'd like it to be Tom O'Hearn, I think it's really between CJ Stroud and Deebo, because both of. For the significance of what was on the line in both games, I'd probably slightly go with CJ Stroud.
Okay.
Because he's a rookie, and he was up against the Broncos, and I tip it to CJ.
Yeah, it's a tough one because, like, you gotta love in sports the sort of the villain character. Not calling the 49ers a villain, but for somebody to talk as much shite as Debo did, and then go on to, as you say, Sasquatch to back it up and really lay a thumping on the Eagles. I think he ended up with 3 touchdowns. Is something else. I'm easy. I would have tended to maybe give it to Debo, but that might just be because I'm trying to play off myself as mature.
Pain.
And yeah, I've moved on. But so.
Yeah, I think I fully take both your points about CJ Stroud, and I think he is exceptional, but I don't think he was any more exceptional than he has been throughout the year. But that was probably Debo's best game in his biggest kind of window, and it was a big window of his making. So for that reason, I'm going to probably insist on Debo, if that's agreeable.
Insist away, my friend.
Yeah. I'll change and I'll go with Debo on that, because I think I think CJ has been at that level for the season.
Yeah.
Ending the year on a win.
Fair play to you.
Nice way to be. It's little wins, folks. But let's get to agree to disagree. So, Rocky, what is your point? Let's go.
Right, mine's going to be fairly broad, and probably you could get a whole episode out of it. But how has sports betting changed fan engagement, influenced team strategies, and affected the overall viewing experience? We can branch this out to various sports, but I'm just going to point the initial emphasis on the NFL, because we saw prior to this season a flurry of players get suspended for sports betting. Despite, you'll see the NFL, it's really embraced it now. They'll show up prop numbers before every game. They'll cite odds from FanDuel or ESPN bets. So, they're propagating this, but at the same time, and obviously, I'll let you take the floor on it, but it's almost hypocritical in how they broadcast it. And
I think what you're seeing in the NFL is arguably 10 years behind what's going on in, say, the Premier League. Like, we look at, say, someone like Ivan Toney, who is currently facing a sizable ban for betting, yet the club he plays for, Brentford, is sponsored by a South African-based betting agency in Hollywood Bets. And it's like, it shows the influence and money that, like, I would somewhat understand that if it was like a Ladbrokes or a British based organization, but this is an organization that is based in South Africa. Most of its clientele would be South African, but it views the advertising window in the Premier League as being that influenceable on the South African betting market that it's seen it as a very good opportunity. They also sponsored, I think, the Chelsea Sharks, I think, as well.
If
could be wrong. So betting has been a huge kind of blight in the game. It's funny that there's certain rules in certain countries with alcohol sponsorship in games, but there doesn't seem to be the same appetite to tackle betting when arguably betting is far more accessible for the youth, because you can do it just via apps and stuff like that. And all I think you really have to do is just confirm you're 18, which as many a adolescent teenager has discovered is very easy. And when the testosterone starts hitting,
as you say, it comes across, I think, as it's almost like a guessing game for the younger fans or demographic, you know, they're seeing these props or whatever, and to them initially it is just a, oh, can I predict what's going to happen correctly? And then, as you say, you just click a box to say you're 18. I know you need to submit your ID, but it's very accessible, far more accessible than alcohol. And we're not going to get into an argument over what's the greatest evil, but yeah, it's a very slippery slope.
Well, there is also an element too of, like, we as a society sometimes downplay vices and addictions, and a gambling addiction is a very severe addiction.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose because it's not as, like, if someone's an alcoholic, it's very obvious.
Yeah.
Someone with a gambling addiction may not be so obvious. So I think we can sometimes treat it as rather benign. And the lines between someone who religiously has to bet 100 to 200 euro a week on any given week,
mm-hmm.
and someone who's addicted to gambling, it's a very blurred line. Whereas we can all sometimes turn around to a mate and go, look, mate, you are drinking a bit too much here. You might need to scale it back a bit.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a silent addiction or something. Like, there is no physical or obvious signs of it until it's too late, when people are, you know, stealing from friends and family and stuff. That's the moral side of it, I suppose. which I think some of the football leagues in Europe, though, are looking to maybe ban gambling as main shirt sponsors and stuff. I think even the Premier League maybe looking at it. You know, like, you look at, like, there must be like 75% of the Premier League were sponsored by gambling companies over the last 5-10 years, even longer, like, in some cases, you know. But it's just everywhere, and it's okay to put out the message when the fun stops, but, like, you know, that's their little
checking a box, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just like, oh, you know, you shouldn't bet beyond your means and stuff like that. But it is very contradicting, though, like, to have it so in your face in the NFL, well, in all sports, for banning players and stuff like that. So it's like, it's where the revenue comes from for all the big contracts and stuff, though. That's the problem with it.
Yeah, obviously, you know, betting on the sport you're involved in, there's no question about the taboo of that, or the
break
of that.
I think there is.
Well, you think there's an argument to be made that it should be allowed?
Absolutely.
How so?
What? Damn, I get betting on games you're involved in. But a lot of Ivan Tony's charges were for games he had no involvement in whatsoever. That shouldn't be taboo.
Yeah, if it's outside of your own league, or, you know, or even within your own league, but games that don't affect you or have any bearing on your team, then, do you know?
Really, don't see any.
The other side is they probably end up with going down the illegal bookies and sharks placing their bets and stuff. Do you know, it's like, oh yeah, put 50 on me to have a yellow card and 4 shots on goal this week. 50k now, not not 50 euro.
I give away 3 corners.
Yeah, yeah.
Centre back. Yeah, it's dangerous. I suppose there's one element we've probably skipped across, and that's changed fan engagement. I think it has a potential to drive viewership. As in, I'm a massive soccer fan here in Ireland, and I'm probably slowly going down a darker route when it comes to gambling. This is fictitious. Mm. This is not me, by the way. I'm rarely flattered, actually. But I kind of notice I get to Sunday and I'm down. And it's Sunday, 6 p.m. And there's nothing else really on between now and the Champions League football on Tuesday. I'm kind of down for the week. I might throw on a few bob on the NFL. It seems to be a heap of games on at 6 o'clock.
Mm.
And then slowly over time, I might watch it a bit more because I've a stake in it. So I think it can drive somewhat fandom, but it's arguably a seedy entry level to fandom, and I articulate it's probably not fandom in a true sense.
Mm.
And it's
it's along the lines of what you were saying there, Sasquatch. There is a blurred line there, because even myself and yourself on our huddles and stout, whenever we're previewing the week ahead, like, I'll always give, you know, the spread, and we pick based on the spread, which is inherently, you know, talking about gambling. So it's, and obviously we're not condoning or encouraging people to go out and bet, but but the line is so blurred that it's so dangerous, I think, just for the NFL to just, without a care or any sort of, you know, afterthought, just put all these props out and then just say when the fun stops, you know?
And ultimately, park us aside, look at the wider kind of media role in it. I'm not saying they're encouraging gambling, but if they're not giving you the props and the spreads and stuff like that, well, people are gambling anyway, so it's kind of like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. You probably should give the information, because it's worthwhile information, even if people aren't gambling on it.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
It's just, it's one of those things, it's not an exact science, I think with this sort of an issue, with the great potential for a lot of social damage, you err on the side of caution on that.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Fair. Look, I think, as you had alluded to in the intro, we could spend the whole episode talking about this, and we'd be here until season 4. So, Chief, the last time in 2023, what's your point?
So, Leinster and Ireland, I suppose, have been somewhat found out in the scrum during the World Cup and so far in the first few weeks of the URC. My thing is Tadhg Furlong past his best for both Leinster and Ireland, or is it just a severe dip in form? And a side note to that is, should Leinster consider switching Andrew Porter back to tight head? There's a lot in it.
I can answer your second point very quickly. I think that's inevitable. It will happen. It's a case of when.
Mm.
And I think it'll happen soon enough. The Tadhg Furlong kind of situation is more difficult. We would have mentioned kind of the World Cup and stuff, and I kind of mentioned a few times. I don't feel like I've seen the Tadhg of previous seasons in the last 12, 13 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he has kind of kept going on, or kept his position almost on reputation as at one stage being probably the best tight head in world rugby.
Yeah.
Whether that's a case of he is done, dust, past his best, or whether if it's a case of there's been a lot of rugby played and he maybe, to borrow a corporate expression, he might actually be a little bit burnt out.
Mm.
So whether a rest period would actually do him good. And that could be, a rest period could be 3 or 4 games of just coming in for the last 20 as opposed to playing the first 60.
Yeah.
As he typically does. I do, however, tend to think it is the former. And I think sometimes, particularly in Irish rugby, we can be, it's kind of the opposite of like Bill Belichick's favourite expression. It's like, I would rather sell a player a year too soon. And I know you're not, realistically speaking, you're not really selling him as such. But I think sometimes with the central contracts, we can probably hold on to players a little bit too soon. This is going to sound like a horrible take and a horrible kind of stance, but I think a lot of other nations, the more aggressive ones, would have moved off Johnny Sexton prior to the World Cup.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I probably would have, like France or New Zealand, if would have done it after 2019. It's like, look, Johnny, we know you're going to be, and listen, he was very good. You know, he still, up until the New Zealand game, like he still looked like he was maybe 10 years younger. But then in that New Zealand game, he looked like he was finished at the top, look, you know, at the top and stuff. And
I know we're talking. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, I think with Tadhg Furlong, I think you're probably right that like a rest period, it could be just a couple of games coming off the bench, or even if he does half a season of being the number two, backing up who Alatoa or whoever is next up in the tie head department there. And ultimately, I think that would benefit Ireland. Like, if you had someone like Tadhg coming on for the last 20, if he gets his, I suppose, his fitness and his form back to 2021 levels, you know, he's definitely got something to add for a couple more years.
There's also an element too of, like, were you to switch Porter to Tighead, and you then assuming that it would be probably Finlay Beelan would probably have the
backup,
the prediction, it will probably be loose, probably would he?
I don't know. See, would Finlay Beelan, would the switch him over to loose? Would
I kind of think they would if you're making them.
Yeah,
like, the option there is you start Finlay Beelan at Tighead. Regardless of who is playing who, it's a far more mobile front row then, especially when you throw in Dan Sheehan or even Ronan Kelly.
Yeah, very mobile.
Far more dynamic front row, which suits the style of rugby Ireland have tried to play in the last 12, 14 months. And I just think that style of rugby is a little bit beyond Tadhg Furlong, even in his heyday.
Yeah.
As exceptionally as he is, and as good as he is in the loose and has been in the loose.
Yeah.
Just think that style of rugby was a bridge too far.
Yeah, and I know Finlay Beelan has deputised that at Loosehead, it was more of a case emergency. But you look at like Healy's 36 now, he's done, he may make the Six Nations squad just because of what he offers in terms of his scrummaging and stuff. Dave Kilcoyne at Munster, 34. You know, like these guys are, we're kind of looking a bit light on our feet for international quality props. Jeremy Lockman's a good loose head. But is he up to the standard of international scrummaging? You know, I think there's still questions there.
Yeah, and I suppose the reason I brought up Sexton is I see this in a few different spots within the Irish team, and I think this is the argument for moving off a year too soon. Well, look, now is the perfect time to do it.
Yeah.
The worst thing that can happen in Irish rugby is we win a Grand Slam this season with the exact same squad that got left the World
Cup. Yeah.
I would rather get a wooden spoon.
Blood and new talent.
New players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I tend to agree with that. The big issue though is it's successful Ireland drives Irish rugby financially.
Which I get.
Yeah. And I don't know, like I think maybe like Leinster are Leinster strong enough to win the Champions Cup this year? I don't know. I think they're probably a player or two short.
They probably are, but what I would say is I would think And maybe this is, look, I'm a rugby fan, so maybe my take here is quite poor. I would think the URC has increased in quality season on season.
Mm.
So I think by extension, it probably is going to slowly start bringing in more casual rugby fans.
Yeah.
Because like a lot of my mates wouldn't miss an Irish rugby game, but would never watch a
provincial game. The URC or any, or even provincial games, yeah.
They're starting to tune in.
Yeah, I think, similar to myself. Like this year you see that everyone's kind of taking wins, like Zebra obviously a couple of wins, and you know it's looking good. Scarlets played Cardiff last week, and it was a tight affair. Like there was a red card for Cardiff in the match, but it's like definitely the competition is. The standards have risen with the big South African teams coming in, as opposed to what we had before with the Cheetahs and
Grikas.
Yeah, I think so, wasn't it? Yeah, or the Pumas or something like that. Or
yeah.
And like no disrespect to them when they're there. Like they had good players. Obviously, they ended up moving on to the bigger franchises in South Africa as well and stuff, so it's but yeah, definitely you see the standard. And like Etzebeth is, you know, there's more of the World Cup winners sticking around in South Africa, and there's serious quality coming through, and it probably will benefit the likes of Leinster, because they know they can't take an armchair ride throughout the regular season. And maybe it's what those players need, is a bit of extra tough competition, and more minutes under the belt, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Fair. And look, I'm going to round out agree, disagree with a very airy-fairy comment. But look, I just think, given it's the final episode of the season, final episode of the year, crystal ball time, gents. Give me your boldest, wildest prediction for all of 2024, sporting-wise. I don't want to hear about your takes on the fall of communist China.
Who wants to go first? I'll tell you what, I'll start off.
I'll let you go, Rocky.
Yeah, I'll start off. And this is purely to endear myself to you, Chief. But I'm predicting that the 2024 Chicago Bears will win the NFC North.
I do like the sound of that.
Yeah, I'll flesh it out just a little bit. I think we've seen a bit of steady progression from Justin Fields. They're on track to get the number one pick. And if they're happy with Justin Fields, they can probably package that pick to move for a slew of additional picks to round out that team. It's looking like there might be a coaching change, moving on from Matt Eberflus. Might move to an offensive-minded coach, of which there's quite a few candidates, enticing candidates. And not only that, within the division, there's a great opportunity for the Lions to regress. It's likely they'll lose their highly touted offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson. Their defense has been a big weakness, and they're likely to either stay with their poor DC or bring in another one and continue in the discontinuity. The Vikings and the Green Bay Packers, they're also trapped in the sort of that, you know, that sort of tier of teams that we say are in purgatory, good enough to not get a good draft pick and vastly improve their deficiencies with that high caliber pick. You know, the Packers need help everywhere. The Vikings need a bona fide quarterback. So I think there's a great chance that the Chicago Bears are next year's wow surprise team, the Houston Texans of 2024.
Mm. I like the sound of that. Yeah.
I don't think it's too far-fetched either. I know we set bold predictions, but I think it's a reasonable path for them to get there.
I think so. Like, looking at their, like, some of their defeats this year have only been one score defeats again. Like, and it was the same last season. Like, without an actual offensive coordinator to do anything with Fields, it's, they're winning in spite of their coaching ticket. The games they've won, it's in spite of the coaching, as opposed to because of the coaching. So I only for this, I've just kind of picked a couple of different sports, like the winners of them for in 2024, and some you'll like, some I don't think you will. Sasquatch, you'll like my Premier League prediction winners. I think it's Arsenal's year to do it. I just think looking at how shaky City have been, they're not usually shaky coming up to Christmas. I know they have the break now for the Club World Cup, but they're never usually shaky November into December, and they're looking beatable by like a lot of teams. And I think, I know Arsenal had a 7-goal thriller last night or Tuesday night.
I tend to agree with half of that. I don't think the Premier League winners this year are going to be City, but I still,
you're not sure if it's Arsenal?
Not convinced. I think it's probably at this stage, if I had to predict it today, I would say it is more likely Liverpool.
I just can't say that.
which I guess.
That would be I've seen Liverpool only win the Premier League once in my life. I've seen Arsenal 3 times, isn't it?
Fair.
Yeah. So I've more respect for Arsenal than I do for Liverpool. Super Bowl winners, no surprise who I'm going to go with. Talked about it earlier with the overall player of the week from us, Debo, and the 49ers. I think we spoke about Brock Purdy, and is he the guy, you know, has he got the tools in the box or the bag to do it? I think he has. He's got great players around him, and I think it's 49ers year this year.
I'll keep the receipt on that one.
It's tough to argue with it though. I think they do look like the best team, both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I think the Eagles can still absolutely turn it around. I think if the offense gets firing there, you will blow teams away. Which obviously hasn't been happening. And then I've two more predictions I'll go with, and it's the URC is the first one, and I think the Bulls of South Africa are going to win the URC out right this year.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I'm going for Bath in the Gallagher Premiership.
I'm trying to think if I have any more to add to that. A bold prediction of mine is that the Lakers win the NBA championship. I know, backing up, it's just a gut feel. It's a bold prediction. That's why I decided to throw it out there. I just think, I believe for a few years, LeBron has a championship left in him, and I think this is probably the last real opportunity. And I feel it would be something he would deserve. Regarding the Super Bowl, I actually feel going back to the Super Bowl, so which means they'd have to beat the 49ers in the NFC Championship. The reason for that is they have talked and talked and talked all year long about we're winning but we're not playing well. I think once they get over the Cowboys, they're going to have to rest Jalen Hurts to get him ready for the playoffs. And I just have a feeling that there's this flick is going to switch. That could be personal bias. More than happy to admit that. And the other prediction that's not too bold either, Ten Hag doesn't see out the season.
Well, it's something I was kind of talking about a couple of weeks back as well, or last week. Would not shock me if he did not finish out the season.
And I would feel that he will kind of have a good run over Christmas until about mid-January, and the wheels will kind of fall off again. And you know, you get rid of him after the transfer window when it's too late to turn around the season.
Yeah.
Is my prediction.
Yeah, that's... You can see it unfolding exactly like that. That they'll have a bump in form, or I suppose, like, they're what? They lost to Newcastle, beat Chelsea. It's, you know, tit for tat, like, in that kind of top six battle and stuff. But yeah, it's hard to... It would be typical United, though, to 1st of February, right, you're gone. Transfer window closed. It's like, can't do anything. Probably won't have offloaded any of the dead wood that needs to be gone in January either. So, yeah, I think that's much less of a bold prediction.
Fair. And that kind of draws a nice end to agree to disagree for 2023. Moving on, we're doing the must-see TV. We're doing the must-see Christmas edition. So it's what each ball bag thinks is the top three games you need to see this festive period. Kind of something that just literally popped into my head. Let's just give them the days and the times. And it's up to them to kind of look up the TV schedule. Rocky, it's you up first.
Okay. Just by pure happenstance, I kind of picked three significant enough dates. I've got a game on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and on New Year's Eve, which is lovely.
Spoken like a man who hates his family.
First game is the Dallas Cowboys in Miami. Should be just two highfalutin teams playing America's sport. Christmas Day, then. Yeah. Hello, I'm back.
You're there.
Christmas Day, we've got the Giants in Philadelphia. Probably less of a competitive game, but you know, you want to sit back, you want to have to, you know, you can enjoy it. You don't need to get stressed, and you love seeing New York get housed. Well, then this is the game for you. And then
Boston Scott
game. Remember the name. Sir. And then on New Year's Eve, the Detroit Lions at the Dallas Cowboys. Again, I know I've picked two Dallas games, which I wasn't really happy with myself about, but again, it should be...
You're hoping for two losses.
Yeah. It could be a great game now. You know, two high-powered offenses. Obviously, the Cowboys at this stage will be fighting for the division. Detroit will probably have it wrapped up by then, but you'll have two teams really fighting for that game.
Fair. Yeah. Chief, what are your fixtures?
So, my fixtures are Friday, probably when most people are finished work, on the 22nd. We've got some Gallagher Premiership action between Sale Sharks and Saracens. Two teams going pretty well. Should be a good game. Again, something just to watch on that Friday evening after work if you're not headed straight to the pub and you're just chilling at home. I think that's a game to watch. And my next game then is, it's officially Stevens' Day, but it's Christmas night into Stevens' Day morning. 1:15, it's the San Francisco 49ers and the Ravens. I think two very good teams going up against each other. I think it's you'll probably be up having your fourth turkey sandwich. So it's just something to have on and to watch.
And should be a great game then.
Finally, my final game to watch then. Where are we? Sorry. It's on the 28th of December. We have Brighton against Spurs. 7:30 on. It's on Prime Video, or however you watch your football. Again, two teams I think going well, and should be a good festive game, I think.
Fair. I've decided to follow Sweet Jew Chief, and I've gone, you know, variety is the spice of life.
Not for me.
As opposed to the other fella, who is the equivalent of opening a tin of celebrations to understand it is filled with bounties.
Oh, lovely bounties.
Two Dallas Cowboy games. Are you for real? Anyway.
Bounties get a lot first of game, ones you hate.
Currently, first versus second, the Premier League. It is Liverpool-Arsenal on the 23rd to the 12th at 5:30. And it is during this game, it will dawn on you, balls, I need to start the Christmas shopping tomorrow. Second game. I know you've mentioned there's a bit of NFL this Christmas, but for me, Christmas is synonymous with basketball. And what an old school classic matchup we have. 10 o'clock on Christmas Day, Celtics versus the Lakers. Segues you lovely into the 49ers-Ravens game. And finally, it wouldn't be Stephen's Day without a good derby. And I've gone Munster-Leinster. It is on at 7:25 Irish time. But there's all our picks for what is due to be another phenomenal Christmas of sport. Gents, it has been my absolute pleasure sitting down with you on a Thursday night over the last few months and weeks. Wish you a very Merry Christmas.
Yeah, I share that same sentiment, Sasquatch. Thanks for having me. Kind of thought you'd have enough of me from our normal segment.
Yeah, huh? I'd say exact same. It's been a pleasure, gents, and wishing you all the best.
Well, that's all from me.
That's all from me.
And that's it for me.
Thank you, and
Merry Christmas.